aspects, including boldness, dominance, and activeness, warmth, agreeableness, and kindness, responsibility, conscientiousness, and industriousness, and especially intelligence, perceptiveness, and creativity. The search for a similar mate provides an elegant solution to the adaptive problem of creating compatibility within the couple so that their interests are maximally aligned in the pursuit of mutual goals. Consider a woman who is an extrovert and loves wild parties and who is married to an introvert who prefers quiet evenings at home. Although they may decide to go their separate ways evening after evening, the mismatch causes strife. Couples in which both members are introverted or both are extroverts do not butt heads about mutually pursued activities. The marriage of a Democrat and a Republican, or a gun control advocate and a gun rights proponent, can make for interesting discussions, but the ensuing conflict wastes valuable energy. Perhaps more important, matched couples maximize the smooth coordination of their efforts when pursuing mutual goals, such as child rearing, maintaining kin alliances, and social networking. A couple at odds over how to rear their child waste valuable energy and also confuse the child, who receives contradictory messages. The search for similarity prevents couples from incurring these costs. People also seek similarity in overall mate value. Because personality characteristics, such as agreeableness, conscientiousness, and intelligence, are all highly desirable on the mating market, those who possess more of them can command more of them in a mate. Those who lack these valuable personal assets can command less, and so often limit their search to those with assets that are similar to their own. By seeking similarity, individuals avoid wasting time and energy trying to attract people who are out of their reach. Consider this example. A female colleague complained that all the men she was attracted to were not interested in her, yet she was being pursued constantly by men she was not really interested in. Her friend told her, "You are an 8. Going after tens, but being sought by sixes." This single observation proved more valuable to her on the mating market than 3 years of therapy. She adjusted her mating strategy accordingly. Those who compete for a mate who exceeds their own mate value risk abandonment by the partner whose mating options are more expansive. Partners discrepant in mate value tend to break up because the more desirable partner can strike a better bargain elsewhere. The search for similarity thus solves several adaptive problems simultaneously. It maximizes the value one can command on the mating market, leads to the coordination of efforts, reduces conflict within the couple, avoids the cost of mutually incompatible goals, and reduces the risk of later abandonment or breakup. Size, strength, and the V-shaped torso. When the great basketball player Magic Johnson revealed that he had slept with thousands of women, he inadvertently revealed women's preference for mates who display physical and athletic prowess. The numbers may be shocking, but the preference is not. Physical characteristics, such as athleticism, size, and strength, convey important information that women use in making a mating decision. The importance of physical characteristics in the female choice of a mate is prevalent throughout the animal world. In the species called the gladiator frog, males are responsible for creating nests and defending the eggs. In the majority of courtships, a stationary male is deliberately bumped by a female who is considering him. She strikes him with great force, sometimes enough to rock him back or even scare him away. If the male moves too much or bolts from the nest, the female hastily leaves to examine alternative mates. Most females mate with males who move minimally when bumped. Only rarely does a female reject a male who remains firmly planted after being bumped. Bumping helps a female frog to decide how successful the male will be at defending her clutch. The bump test reveals the male's physical ability to perform the function of protection. Women sometimes face physical domination by men who are larger and stronger than they are, which can lead to injury and sexual aggression and prevent them from exercising choice. Such domination undoubtedly occurred regularly during ancestral times. Indeed, Studies of many non-human primate groups reveal that male physical and sexual domination of females has been a recurrent part of our primate heritage. The primatologist Barbara Smuts lived among baboons in the savanna plains of Africa while studying their mating patterns. She found that females form enduring special friendships with males who offer physical protection to them and their infants. In return, these females grant their friends preferential sexual access during times of estrus. Analogously, one benefit to women of committed mating is the physical protection a man can offer. A man's size, strength, and physical prowess are cues to solutions to the problems of protection. My lab and others found that women judge short men to be undesirable as long-term mates. In contrast, they find it very desirable for a potential mate to be tall, physically strong, and athletic. Tall men are consistently seen as more desirable dates and mates than men who are short or of average height. Two studies of personal ads revealed that among women who mention height, 80% want a man who is 6 feet or taller. Ads placed by taller men receive more responses from women than those placed by shorter men, which may explain why men tend to round up by a couple of inches when describing their height to women on online dating sites. Tall men date more often than short men and have a larger pool of potential mates. Women solve the problem of protection from aggressive men at least in part by preferring a mate who has the size, strength, and physical prowess to protect them. In addition to height, women are especially attracted to athletic men with a V-shaped torso, that is, broader shoulders relative to hips. Interestingly, these female preferences may have exerted sexual selection pressure on men, since modern men currently show upper body strength that is roughly twice that of women. It is one of the most sexually dimorphic attributes of the human body. Tall men tend to have a higher status in nearly all cultures. Big men in hunter-gatherer societies, men high in status, are physically big men as well. In Western cultures, tall men make more money, advance in their professions more rapidly, and receive more and earlier promotions. Few American presidents have been less than 6 feet tall. Politicians are keenly aware of voters' preference. During the televised presidential debate in 1988, George H.W. Bush made a point of standing very close to his shorter competitor, Michael Dukakis, in a strategy of highlighting their disparity in size. As the evolutionary psychologist Bruce Ellis notes, height constitutes a reliable cue to dominance in social interactions. Shorter policemen are likely to be assaulted more than taller policemen, suggesting that the latter command more fear and respect from adversaries. Taller men are more sought after in women's personal advertisements, receive more responses to their own personal advertisements, and tend to have prettier girlfriends than do shorter men. This preference for tall men is not limited to Western cultures. For men of the Mihanaku tribe of the Brazilian Amazon, the anthropologist Thomas Greger notes, size differences have acutely important effects in the wrestling arena. A heavily muscled, imposingly built man is likely to accumulate many girlfriends, while a small man, deprecatingly referred to as a perici, fares badly. The mere fact of height creates a measurable advantage. A powerful wrestler, say the villagers, is frightening. He commands fear and respect. To the women, he is beautiful, auritsiri, in demand as a paramour and husband. Triumphant in politics as well as in love, the champion wrestler embodies the highest qualities of manliness. Not so fortunate the vanquished. A chronic loser, no matter what his virtues, is regarded as a fool. As he wrestles, the men shout mock advice. The women are less audible as they watch the matches from their doorways. But they too have their sarcastic jokes. None of them is proud of having a loser as a husband or lover. The presence of aggressive men who tried to dominate women physically and to circumvent their sexual choices may have been an important influence on women's mate selection in ancestral times. Barbara Smuts argues that, consequently, during human evolutionary history, physical protection from other men was one of the most important things a man could offer a woman. Given the alarming incidence of sexual coercion and rape in many cultures, a mate's protection value may well remain relevant to mate selection in modern environments. Many women simply do not feel safe on the streets, and a strong, tall, athletic mate acts as a deterrent to other sexually aggressive men. Good health, symmetry, and masculinity. It may come as no surprise that women and men worldwide prefer mates who are healthy. In the 37 Culture Study, women judged good health to be anywhere from important to indispensable in a marriage partner. In another study on American women, poor physical conditions ranging from bad grooming habits to having a sexually transmitted infection, STI, were regarded as extremely undesirable characteristics in a mate. The biologists Clellan Ford and Frank Beach found that signs of ill health, such as open sores, lesions, and unusual pallor, are universally regarded as unattractive. In humans, good health may be signaled by behavior, as well as by physical appearance. A lively mood, high energy level, and sprightly gait, for example, may be attractive precisely because they are calorically costly and can be displayed only by people brimming with good health. The tremendous importance we place on good health is not unique to our species. Some animals display large, loud, and gaudy traits that are costly and yet signal great health and vitality. Consider the bright, flamboyant, ostentatious plumage of the peacock. It is as if the peacock is saying, "Look at me. I'm so fit that I can carry these large, cumbersome feathers, and yet I'm still thriving." The mystery of the peacock's tail, which seems so contrary to utilitarian survival, is finally on the verge of being solved. The biologists William D. Hamilton and Marlene Zook proposed that the brilliant plumage serves as a signal that the peacock carries a light load of parasites, since peacocks who carry more than the average number of parasites have duller plumage. The burdensome plumage provides a cue to health and robustness. Peahens prefer the brilliant plumage because it provides clues to the male's health. Women are especially attracted to men who show two observable markers of good health, symmetrical features and masculinity. Bodies are supposed to be bilaterally symmetrical, so deviations in symmetry represent errors a body made in constructing itself. These superficial errors may signal other errors made in constructing important systems, such as the immune system. Errors have two sources: genetic mutations and environmental stresses, such as injuries or disease during development. More symmetrical men tend to be healthier and to experience fewer illnesses, such as respiratory diseases, and women find them more attractive than their more lopsided peers. Masculine features in men provide another set of health cues. These features include longer and broader lower jaws, stronger brow ridges, deeper voices, and the classic male V-shaped torso. Masculine qualities are primarily the product of testosterone production during adolescence, when a male's facial, body, and vocal qualities are forming. The problem is that too much testosterone can be bad for men, compromising their immune system and leading to shorter lives. So why do some men develop such masculine features? The theory is that only very healthy men, those with strong immune systems, can afford to produce a lot of testosterone during adolescence. Men with weaker immune systems cut back on testosterone production, not consciously, of course, to prevent compromising their already tenuous health. According to this theory, masculine features are honest signals of good health, and indeed, women find masculine features to be somewhat attractive in long-term mating, although they find these features even more attractive when choosing a casual sex partner. In ancestral times, four bad consequences were likely to follow if a woman selected a mate who was unhealthy or disease-prone. First, she put herself and her family at risk of contracting the disease. Second, her mate was less able to perform essential functions and provide crucial benefits to her and her children, such as food, protection, healthcare, and child-rearing. Third, her mate was at increased risk of dying, prematurely cutting off the flow of resources and forcing her to incur the costs of searching for a new mate and courting all over again. And fourth, If health is partly heritable, she would risk passing on genes for poor health to her children. A preference for healthy mates solves the problem of mate survival and ensures that resources are likely to be delivered over the long run. Love, kindness, and commitment. A man's possession of assets, such as health, status, resources, intelligence, and emotional stability, however, does not guarantee his willingness to commit them to a particular woman. Some men show a tremendous reluctance to marry or commit. Some prefer playing the field of singledom and seek a series of casual sex partners. Some popular online dating apps, such as Tinder, facilitate this short-term strategy. Women sometimes derogate men for this hesitancy, calling them commitment dodgers, commitment phobics, paranoid about commitment, and fearful of the M word. And women's negative reaction to these proclivities makes sense, given the large asymmetries in the costs of sex. Because women historically incurred large costs and heavy investment as a result of sex, pregnancy, and childbirth, it often has been reproductively advantageous for them to seek some level of commitment from men with whom they have sex. The weight that women attach to commitment is revealed in the following true story. The names are changed. Mark and Susan had been going out with each other for 2 years and had been living together for 6 months. He was a well-off, 42-year-old professional. She was a medical student of 28. Susan pressed for a decision about marriage. They were in love, and she wanted to have children within a few years, but Mark balked. He had been married before and divorced. If he ever married again, he wanted to be absolutely sure it would be permanent. As Susan continued to press for a decision, Mark raised the possibility of a prenuptial agreement. She resisted, feeling that this violated the spirit of marriage. Finally, they agreed that by a date 4 months in the future, he would have decided one way or the other. The date came and went, and still Mark could not make a decision. Susan told him that she was leaving him, moved out, and started dating another man. Mark panicked. He called her up and begged her to come back, saying that he had changed his mind and would marry her. He promised a new car. He promised that there would be no prenuptial agreement. But it was too late. Mark's failure to commit was too strong a negative signal to Susan. It dealt the final blow to their relationship. She was gone forever. Women, past and present, face the adaptive problem of choosing men who not only have the necessary resources, but also show a willingness to commit those resources specifically to them. This problem may be more difficult than it seems at first. Although resources can often be directly observed, commitment cannot. Instead, gauging commitment requires looking for probabilistic clues. Love is one of the most important cues to commitment. Feelings and acts of love are not recent products of particular Western views, contrary to some conventional beliefs in the social sciences. Love is universal. Thoughts, emotions, and actions of love are experienced by people in all cultures worldwide. From the Zulu in the southern tip of Africa to the Inuit in the north of Alaska, in a survey of 168 diverse cultures from around the world, the anthropologist William Jankowiak found strong evidence for the presence of romantic love in nearly 90% of them. For the remaining 10%, the anthropological records were too sketchy to definitely verify the presence of love. When the sociologist Sue Sprecher and her colleagues interviewed 1,667 men and women in Russia, Japan, and the United States, they found that 61% of the Russian men and 73% of the Russian women were currently in love. Comparable figures for the Japanese were 41% of the men and 63% of the women. Among Americans, 53% of the men and 63% of the women acknowledged being in love. Clearly, love is not a phenomenon limited to Western cultures. To identify precisely what love is and how it is linked to commitment, my lab initiated a study of acts of love. First, we asked 50 women and 50 men from the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Michigan to think of people they knew who were currently in love and to describe actions performed by those people that reflected or exemplified their love. A different group of college men and women evaluated each of the nominated 115 acts for how typical it was of love. Acts of commitment topped the women's and men's lists, being viewed as most central to love. Such acts included giving up romantic relations with others, talking of marriage, and expressing a desire to have children with the person. When performed by a man, these acts of love signaled the intention to commit resources to one woman. Commitment has many facets. One major component of commitment is fidelity, exemplified by the act of remaining faithful to a partner when apart. Fidelity signals the exclusive commitment of sexual resources to a single partner. Another aspect of commitment is the channeling of resources to the loved one, such as buying an expensive gift or ring. These acts signal a serious intention to commit economic resources to a long-term relationship. Emotional support is yet another facet of commitment, revealed by behavior such as being available in times of trouble and listening to the partner's problems. Commitment entails a channeling of time, energy, and effort to the partner's needs at the expense of fulfilling one's own personal goals. Acts of reproduction, such as planning to have children, also represent a direct commitment to one's partner's genes. All these acts of love signal the commitment of sexual, economic, emotional, and genetic resources to one person. Since love is a worldwide phenomenon, and since a primary function of acts of love is to signal commitment of reproductively relevant resources, women should place a premium on love in the process of choosing a mate. To find out if they do, Sue Sprecher and her colleagues asked American, Russian, and Japanese students whether they would marry someone who had all the qualities they desired in a mate if they were not in love with that person. Fully 89% of American women and 82% of Japanese women said they would still require love for marriage even if all other important qualities were present. Among Russians, only 59% of women would not marry someone with whom they were not in love, no matter how many desirable qualities that person had. Although a clear majority of Russian women required love, the lower threshold may reflect the tremendous difficulty Russian women have in finding a mate because of the severe shortage of men in their country, especially men capable of investing resources. These variations reveal the effects of cultural context on mating. Nonetheless, the majority of women in all three cultures saw love as an indispensable ingredient in marriage. Direct studies of preferences in a mate confirm the centrality of love. In a study of 162 Texas women college students, out of 100 characteristics examined, the quality of being loving was the most strongly desired in a potential husband. The 37 culture study confirmed the universal importance of love. Among 18 possible characteristics, mutual attraction or love proved to be the most highly valued in a potential mate by both sexes, being rated a 2.87 by women and 2.81 by men out of 3.0. Nearly all women and men, from the enclaves of South Africa to the bustling streets of Brazilian cities, gave love the top rating, indicating its indispensability for a committed mateship. Women place a premium on love in order to secure the commitment of men's economic, emotional, and sexual resources. Two additional personal characteristics, kindness and sincerity, are critical to securing long-term commitment. In one study of 800 personal advertisements, sincerity was the single most frequently listed characteristic sought by women. Another analysis of 1,111 personal advertisements again showed that sincerity was the quality most frequently sought by women. Indeed, women advertisers sought sincerity nearly 4 times as often as men advertisers. Sincerity in personal advertisements is a code word for commitment, and women use it to screen out men seeking casual sex without any commitment. People worldwide depend on kindness, not from strangers, but rather from their mates. As shown by the 37 Culture study, women have a strong preference for mates who are kind and understanding. In 32 out of the 37 cultures, in fact, the sexes were identical in valuing kindness as one of the three most important qualities out of a possible 13 in a mate. Only in Japan and Taiwan did men give greater emphasis than women to kindness. And only in Nigeria, Israel, and France did women give greater emphasis than men to kindness. In no culture, however, was kindness in a mate ranked lower than 3rd out of 13 for either sex. Women desired kindness in a mate especially when it was directed toward them, and less so when it was directed toward other people or other women, supporting the notion that women prize dispositions in men to commit their resources selectively rather than indiscriminately. Kindness is an enduring personality characteristic that has many components, but at the core of all of them is the commitment of resources. The trait signals an empathy toward children, a willingness to put a mate's needs before one's own, and a willingness to channel energy and effort toward a mate's goals, rather than exclusively and selfishly to one's own goals. Kindness, in other words, signals the ability and willingness of a potential mate to commit energy and resources selflessly to a partner. A lack of kindness signals selfishness or inability or unwillingness to commit, and a high likelihood that costly burdens will be inflicted on a spouse. The study of newlyweds, for example, found that women married to unkind men complained that their spouses abused them, both verbally and physically, by hitting, slapping, or spitting at them. Unkind men tended to be condescending, putting down their wives' opinions as stupid or inferior. They are selfish, monopolizing shared resources. They are inconsiderate, failing to do any housework. They are neglectful, failing to show up as promised. Finally, they have more extramarital affairs, suggesting that these men are unable or unwilling to commit to a monogamous relationship. Unkind men look out for themselves and have trouble committing to anything much beyond that. Because sex is one of the most valuable reproductive resources women can offer, they have evolved psychological mechanisms that cause them to resist giving it away indiscriminately. Requiring love, sincerity, and kindness is a way of securing a commitment of resources commensurate with the value of the resource that women give to men. Requiring love and kindness helps women to solve the critical adaptive mating problem of securing the commitment of resources from a man that can aid in the survival and reproduction of her offspring. Deal breakers. The flip side of what women want is what women do not want, the proverbial deal breakers. Incest avoidance is one of the most important. Reproducing with a genetic relative creates inbreeding depression, which results in children with genetic abnormalities, such as Down syndrome and lower levels of intelligence. Although most people experience the emotion of disgust when contemplating sex with close kin, women are especially repulsed. This gender difference follows from the facts of parental investment. The costs of making a poor sexual decision are typically higher for women than men. Even the thought of tongue-kissing a sibling or parent typically evokes strong disgust in women. Alongside beats me up, will have sex with other people when he is with me, and is addicted to drugs, is my sibling is one of the most powerful deal-breakers for women. Most deal-breakers, however, are simply the inverses of the qualities that women desire. Lacking resources, drive, ambition, or status, lacking intelligence, being undependable or emotionally unstable, being small, weak, or feminine in appearance, being unhealthy or asymmetrical, being mean or cruel, and lacking love, specifically for the woman doing the mate selecting. Do women's desires change when they have power and resources? Many years ago, I offered a different possible explanation for women's preference for men with resources, based on the so-called structural powerlessness and sex role socialization of women. According to this view, because women are typically excluded from power and access to resources, which are largely controlled by men, women seek mates who have power, status, and earning capacity. Women try to marry upward in socioeconomic status to gain access to resources. Men do not value economic resources in a mate as much as women do because men already have control over these resources, and because women have fewer resources anyway. The Society of Bakwiri from Cameroon in West Africa casts doubt on this theory by illustrating what happens when women have real power. Bakwiri women hold greater personal and economic power because they have more resources and are in scarcer supply than men. Women secure resources through their own labors on plantations, but also from casual sex, which is a lucrative source of income. There are roughly 236 men for every 100 women, an imbalance that results from the continual influx of men from other areas of the country to work on the plantations. Because of the extreme imbalance in the number of the sexes, women have more money than men and more potential mates to choose from. Yet, despite this greater latitude, Bakwiri women persist in preferring to have a mate with resources. Wives often complain about receiving insufficient support from their husbands. Indeed, lack of sufficient economic provisioning is the most frequently cited divorce complaint of women. Bakwiri women change husbands if they find a man who can offer them more money and pay a larger bride price. When women are in a position to fulfill their evolved preference for a man with resources, they do so. Having the dominant control of economic resources does not diminish this key mate preference. Professionally and economically successful women in the United States also value resources in men. My lab's newlywed study identified women who were financially successful, measured by their salary and income, and contrasted their preferences in a mate with those of women with lower salaries and income. Many of the financially successful women earned more than $100,000 per year in today's dollars. These women were well-educated, tended to have professional degrees, and had high self-esteem. Perhaps surprisingly, the study showed that successful women place an even greater value than less successful women on mates who have professional degrees, high social status, and greater intelligence, as well as desiring mates who are tall, independent, and self-confident. These women also express an even stronger preference for high-earning men than do women who are less financially successful. In a separate study, the psychologists Michael Wiederman and Elizabeth Allgaier found that college women who expected to earn the most after college placed more importance on the financial prospects of a potential husband than did women who expected to earn less. Professionally successful women, such as medical students and law students, also assigned great importance to a mate's earning capacity. Furthermore, men who were low in financial resources and status did not value economic resources in a mate any more than financially successful men did. Cross-cultural studies also find that women with their own economic resources value resources in a potential mate more, not less, than women lacking these resources. A study of 1,670 Spanish women found that high-resource women wanted mates with more status and more resources. A study of 288 Jordanians found the same thing, as did a study of 127 Serbians and an internet study of 1,851 English women. Taken together, these results not only fail to support the structural powerlessness or sex role hypothesis, but directly contradict it. Structural powerlessness has an element of truth in that men in many cultures do control resources and sometimes do exclude women from power. But the theory cannot explain several facts. Men strive to exclude other men from power at least as much as they do women. The origins of the male motivation to control resources remain unexplained. Women have not evolved bigger, stronger bodies to acquire resources directly, and men's preferences in a mate remain entirely mysterious. Evolutionary psychology accounts for this constellation of findings. Men strive to control resources and to exclude other men from resources to fulfill women's mating preferences. In human evolutionary history, men who failed to accumulate resources failed to attract mates. Men's more powerful status and resource acquisition drives are due, at least in part, to the preferences that women have expressed over the past few million years. To paraphrase the evolutionary anthropologist Sarah Hurdy, men are one long breeding experiment run by women. Sexual orientation and mate preferences. As mentioned in Chapter 1, the origins of same-sex sexual orientation remain largely a mystery. The mate preferences of women who self-identify as lesbian, however, are better known. In 2007, Richard Lippa published the largest study on this topic, reporting the mate preferences of 2,500 lesbian women and comparing them to those of 82,819 heterosexual women. He found two clusters of findings. First, many of the mate preferences of the two groups were quite similar. Both valued health, kindness, industriousness, sense of humor, and similar values in a mate. Lesbian women differed from heterosexual women, however, in placing less importance on fondness for children, parenting abilities, and religion. Interestingly, although both groups placed tremendous importance on honesty and intelligence, lesbian women valued these traits even more strongly. Another study examined individual differences among lesbian women, focusing on differences between those who self-identified as butch and as femme. Butch women tended to be more masculine, dominant, and assertive. Femme women tended to be more sensitive, cheerful, and feminine. The femme tended to express a stronger desire to have children and placed more importance on the financial resources of a potential romantic partner. Butch lesbians tended to place less emphasis on the financial resources of a potential partner, but experienced greater jealousy over rival competitors who were more financially successful. Thus, in many ways, lesbian women are somewhat similar to heterosexual women in their mate preferences, but differ in a few of the qualities desired. More importantly, there are large individual differences among self-identified lesbians, and these variations caution against sweeping generalizations. Context-dependent shifts in women's desires. In addition to a woman's personal economic power, several other circumstances cause predictable changes in which men she desires. These include whether other women find a man attractive, whether she is seeking a committed partner or casual sex, and her own mate value. One of the most successful beer commercials of all time depicts a well-dressed man with a bottle of Dos Equis in his hand. Depending on the version, there are either two or three very attractive women surrounding him. This commercial might appeal to men because it implies that they will enhance their attractiveness to women if they drink this brand of beer. But being surrounded by beautiful women also makes the man more attractive to women. Animal biologists have given this phenomenon the clunky name mate copying. From fish to birds, females use the apparent preferences of other females as critical information about a potential mate's mate value. Mate copying has also been found in humans in my lab, in a study led by Sarah Hill, and in four other labs. Women find men surrounded by other women especially attractive if those women are themselves physically attractive and if they seem attentive to and interested in the man. Temporal context, whether a woman is seeking a sexual hookup or a committed partner, also influences desire. In long-term mating, women prioritize character traits such as kindness, dependability, and emotional stability, as well as qualities that signal excellent future status and resource potential, such as ambition, industriousness, and education. For casual sex partners, however, these qualities become considerably less important. Instead, women emphasize physical attractiveness, desirability to other women, and higher levels of masculinity, qualities that might be linked with good genes, a topic we cover in greater depth in Chapter 4. Finally, women's own level of desirability influences their desires. It may not come as a shock that women who are 8s are generally choosier than women who are 6s or 5s. More desirable women have more bargaining power on the mating market, and they can elevate their standards. Women with high mate value in Canada, America, Croatia, Poland, Brazil, and Japan have been found to list a longer set of sought-after traits in their personal ads. They want higher levels of resources, education and intelligence, higher social status, good parenting skills, good partner skills, and a raft of other traits. What may be less intuitively obvious is that women with high mate value are especially drawn to masculine men compared with their lower mate value counterparts. This disparity has been found for vocal masculinity as well as facial masculinity. One speculation for this preference shift pivots on the finding that masculine men tend, on average, to be less faithful than less masculine men. Perhaps only a woman who is high in mate value herself feels that she can control the wandering eye of an attractive, masculine man by reminding him that he risks losing her. Effects of women's desires on actual mating behavior. Mate preferences cannot evolve unless they affect actual mating behavior, at least some of the time. Of course, people cannot always get what they want. Most must settle for someone less than their ideal mate. A raft of scientific studies demonstrate, however, that women's desires do influence their actual mating decisions. One source of evidence comes from personal ads. Which ads placed by men get more hits, clicks, or right swipes from women? Age is a key predictor. More mature men get more hits than younger men, although women generally set the limit at 10 years older than themselves. Men who indicate higher levels of income and education get more hits, a trend that has been replicated in Poland as well as the United States. A study of 21,973 men found that those higher in socioeconomic status were more likely to attract wives. Poor men are more likely to remain bachelors. Among the Kepsikis of Kenya, men with land resources are more likely to attract wives, and men with a lot of land attract multiple wives. American men with resources are more likely to marry physically attractive women, and women worldwide in all cultures across the globe tend, on average, to marry men who are somewhat older than they are. Women's desires in a mate also influence men's behavior, precisely as predicted from the logic of sexual selection theory. Studies of mate attraction find that men display resources, such as cars, houses, gifts, and expensive dinners, to attract women. And men derogate their rivals verbally by impugning their status, ambition, physical prowess, and resources. Even in online dating ads, men are more likely than women to exaggerate their income, education level, and height, rounding up by about 10 to 20%. In these ways, women's mate preferences influence actual mating behavior, both their own and that of the men seeking to attract them. Women's many preferences. We now have the outlines of an answer to the enigma of what women want. Women are judicious, prudent, and discerning about the men they consent to mate with because they have so many valuable reproductive resources to offer. Those with valuable resources rarely give them away indiscriminately. The costs in reproductive currency of failing to exercise choice were too great for ancestral women, who would have risked beatings, food deprivation, disease, abuse of children, and abandonment. By contrast, the benefits of exercising choice in nourishment, protection, gene quality, and paternal investment in children were abundant. Committed mates may bring with them a treasure trove of resources. Selecting a long-term mate who has the relevant resources is clearly an extraordinarily complex endeavor. For women, it involves at least a dozen distinctive preferences, each corresponding to a resource that helps them solve critical adaptive problems. That women seek resources in a long-term mate may seem obvious to the casual observer, but until the 37 culture study, that preference had not been scientifically documented worldwide. Moreover, because men's resources and resource acquisition skills often cannot be directly discerned, women's preferences are keyed to other qualities that signal the likely possession or future acquisition of resources. Indeed, women may be less influenced by money per se than by qualities that lead to resources, such as ambition, drive, status, intelligence, emotional stability, and mature age. Women scrutinize these personal qualities carefully because they reveal a man's potential. Potential, however, is not enough because many men with a high resource potential are themselves discriminating and are at times content with casual sex. Women are faced with the problem of commitment. Seeking love and sincerity are two solutions to the commitment problem. Sincerity signals that the man is capable of commitment. Acts of love signal that he has, in fact, committed to a particular woman. To have the love and commitment of a man who could be easily defeated by other men in the physical arena, however, would have been a problematic asset for ancestral women. Women mated to small, weak men lacking in physical prowess would have risked damage from other men and loss of the couple's joint resources. Tall, strong, athletic men with V-shaped torsos offered ancestral women protection. In this way, their resources and commitment could be secured against incursion. Women who selected men in part for their strength and prowess were more likely to be successful at surviving and reproducing. Resources, commitment, and protection do a woman little good if her husband sickens or dies, or if the couple is so mismatched that they fail to function as an effective team. The premium that women place on a man's health ensures that husbands will be capable of providing these benefits over the long haul. And the premium that women place on similarity of interests and traits with their mate helps to ensure the convergence of mutually pursued goals. These multiple facets of current women's mating preferences correspond precisely with the multiple facets of the adaptive problems faced by our women ancestors thousands of years ago. Women, of course, do not evaluate potential mates one trait at a time. Men come as whole packages of qualities that must be accepted or rejected altogether. This inevitably requires trade-offs. A kind man may be willing to devote his entire life to one woman and have great potential as a father, but may have fewer resources to provide. A strong, healthy, attractive man may be a sterling provider of resources and good genes, but may be more tempted to be unfaithful. Moreover, many circumstances create shifts in women's mate preferences, her personal resource acquisition ability, whether she is seeking a long-term mate or a casual sex partner, close kin in proximity, the sex ratio in the mating pool, and the presence of other women who are attracted to a particular man. The reason men have been baffled for so long about what women want is that women's mate preferences are inherently complex, multifaceted, and context-dependent, reflecting the large number of intricate adaptive challenges our ancestral mothers confronted repeatedly over the long course of human evolutionary history. Ancestral men were confronted with a different set of adaptive problems. So we must now shift perspective to gaze at ancestral women as potential mates through the eyes of our male forebears. 3. What men want. Beauty is in the adaptations of the beholder. Donald Simons, What Do Men Want? Why men would ever commit to just one woman poses a puzzle. Since all an ancestral man needed to do to reproduce was to impregnate a woman, casual sex without commitment would have achieved this goal. For evolution to produce men who desire commitment or marriage and who are willing to devote years of investment to one woman, powerful adaptive advantages to that strategy over one of seeking casual sex, at least under some circumstances, must have been present. One solution to this puzzle comes from the ground rules set by women. Since it is clear that many ancestral women required reliable signs of mate commitment before consenting to sex, men who failed to commit would have suffered on the mating market. They might have failed to attract any woman at all, or perhaps they failed to attract the more desirable women and had to settle for those lower in mate value. Women's requirements for consenting to sex made it costly for most men to pursue a short-term mating strategy exclusively. In the economics of reproductive effort, the costs of not pursuing a long-term mate would have been prohibitively high for most men. and men would have benefited as their odds of attracting a mate, as well as attracting a more desirable mate, increased with their willingness to commit. Another way in which men benefited from sustained commitment to one woman was by increasing the odds that he would be the father of any children she bore, upping his probability of genetic paternity. By committing for the long term, men typically gained repeated and exclusive sexual access, and their close proximity would put them in a position to fend off potential mate poachers. Without commitment, repeated sex became questionable and paternity more uncertain. A further benefit of committing to one woman was the increased survival and reproductive success of the man's children. In human ancestral environments, infants and young children were more likely to die without sustained investment from two parents or related kin. Among the Ashe of Paraguay, for example, when a man dies in a club fight, the other villagers often make a collective decision to kill his children, even when the children have a living mother. In one case, reported by the anthropologist Kim Hill, a boy of 13 was killed after his father had died in a club fight. Overall, Ashe children whose fathers die suffer a death rate more than 10% higher than children whose fathers remain alive. Over human evolutionary history, even children who did survive without the father's investment would have suffered by missing out on the knowledge he could impart and the political alliances he could bestow. Both of these assets help solve mating problems later in life. Fathers in many cultures, past and present, have a strong hand in arranging beneficial marriages for their sons and daughters. The absence of these benefits challenges the evolutionary fitness of children without fathers. These evolutionary pressures, operating over thousands of generations, gave an advantage to men who pursued a long-term strategy of commitment. The economics of the mating marketplace typically produces an asymmetry between the sexes in their ability to obtain a desirable mate in a committed as opposed to a temporary relationship. Most men can obtain a much more desirable mate if they are willing to commit to a long-term relationship because women typically desire a lasting commitment, and highly desirable women are in the best position to get what they want. In contrast, most women can obtain a much more desirable casual partner by offering sex without requiring commitment. Since high-status men are willing to relax their standards and have sex with a variety of women if the short-term hookup carries no commitment, high-status men impose more stringent standards for a partner to whom they are willing to commit. Men also gain in two other ways by committing. One is an increase in social status. In many cultures, males are not considered real men until they have married. Increased status, of course, brings a man other bounties, including better resources for his children, and sometimes an increased attractiveness to additional mates. A final benefit of commitment or marriage is the formation of a more expansive coalitional network that includes his spouse's friends and kin. Men, in short, have much to gain by committing to one woman. Much of what men want in a long-term mate coincides with what women want. Like women, men want committed partners who are intelligent, kind, dependable, emotionally stable, and healthy. For men, as well as for women, these qualities are linked with mates who will make excellent partners, excellent allies, and excellent parents. These qualities could also signal good genetic material and low mutation loads, that is, fewer copying errors within the partner's genome, qualities that make for healthier and more robust children. But men face an adaptive problem not faced by women, at least not as poignantly, choosing a fertile partner. To be reproductively successful, the most obvious criterion would be a woman's ability to bear children. A woman with high reproductive capacity would be extremely valuable in evolutionary currencies. Men need some basis, however, on which to judge a woman's reproductive capacity. The solution to this problem is diabolically difficult. Ancestral men had few obvious aids for figuring out which women possessed the highest reproductive value. A woman's fertility is not stamped on her forehead or advertised with flashing neon signs. It cannot be observed directly, and it is not imbued in her social reputation. Her family is clueless. Even women themselves lack direct knowledge of their reproductive value. The adaptive problem of detecting which women are fertile comes into clear view when we consider chimpanzees, our closest primate relatives. When a female chimp is fertile, she goes into an estrus phase. Her genitals become engorged, creating bright red swellings that are indeed somewhat like neon signs in their visibility. She emits ovulatory scents at ovulation. These estrus signals send male chimps into a sexual frenzy. To make it even easier on these male chimps, estrus females often energetically solicit sex, presenting themselves to males they prefer. Men do not have it this easy. Although there are subtle changes that women undergo when ovulating, such as a slight lightening of their skin and a slight rise in voice pitch, women have nothing approaching the vivid, visible ovulation signals emitted by female chimps. Over evolutionary history, vivid signs of human ovulation were largely driven underground, irrevocably changing the ground rules of mating. A preference, nevertheless, evolved for fertility. Ancestral men evolved mechanisms to sense cues to a woman's underlying reproductive value, and two obvious and observable cues were youth and health. Old or unhealthy women clearly could not reproduce as much as young, healthy women. Ancestral men solved the problem of finding reproductively valuable women in part by preferring those who were young and healthy. But how can youth and health be discerned? Youth. It is a fact of fertility that women's reproductive capacity declines steadily with increasing age after the mid-20s. By the age of 40, a woman's reproductive capacity is low. By 50, it is close to zero. Women's capacity for reproduction is compressed into a fraction of their lives. Men's preferences capitalize on this critical cue. In the United States, men uniformly express a desire for mates who are younger than they are. Among college students surveyed from 1939 through 2005 on campuses coast to coast, the preferred age difference hovered around 2.5 years. 21-year-old men preferred, on average, women who were 18 and a half. Men's preoccupation with a woman's youth is not limited to Western cultures. When the anthropologist Napoleon Chagnon was asked which females are most sexually attractive to Yanomamo men of the Amazon, he replied without hesitation, "Females who are mokodude." The word moko, when used with respect to fruit, means that the fruit is harvestable, and when used with respect to a woman, it means that the woman is fertile. Thus, fruit that is mokodude is perfectly ripe, and a woman who is mokodude is post-pubescent but has not yet born her first child, or about 15 to 18 years of age. Comparative information on other tribal and traditional peoples suggests that the Yanomamo men are typical in their preference. Nigerian, Indonesian, Iranian, and Indian men are similarly inclined. Without exception, in every one of the 37 societies examined in the international study, men preferred wives who were younger than themselves. Nigerian men who were 23 and a half years old, for example, preferred wives who were 6.5 years younger, or just over 17 years old. Croatian men who were 21 and a half years old expressed a desire for wives who were approximately 19. Chinese, Canadian, and Colombian men shared with their Nigerian and Croatian brethren a powerful desire for younger women. On average, men from the 37 cultures expressed a desire for wives approximately 2.5 years younger than themselves. Although men universally preferred younger women as wives, the strength of this preference varied somewhat from culture to culture. Scandinavian men in Finland, Sweden, and Norway preferred their brides to be only 1 or 2 years younger. Men in Nigeria and Zambia preferred their brides to be 6.5 and 7.5 years younger, respectively. In Nigeria and Zambia, which practice polygyny, like many cultures worldwide, men who can afford it are legally permitted to marry more than one woman. Men in polygynous mating systems are typically older than men in monogamous systems by the time they have acquired sufficient resources to attract wives. the larger age difference preferred by Nigerian and Zambian men probably reflects their greater age when they acquire wives. This interpretation is supported by a raft of scientific studies showing that, as men get older, they prefer as mates women who are increasingly younger than they are. Consider the statistics derived from online personal advertisements. A man's age has a strong effect